So last week, we opened up a single verse quoted in the New Testament, but was a quotation taken from Isaiah in the Old Testament. No eye has seen, no ear has heard, and it told of an unmatched, unprecedented God, the like of which has never been seen or heard before or since, who has done something unique, the God of Israel, the Christian God, who, as the living God, stepped down and acted on behalf of his people. If you weren't here last week, I want to encourage you, go to the website and listen and learn of this God that we have. What I want to do today is stay in Isaiah and go for another single verse, an even shorter phrase, which describes, again, a God of absolutely no equal, and again challenges us, what is our response in the light of that? It also does something else. It reinforces what we looked at last week, that we have a God who acts on behalf of his people. And the phrase that I want to use comes from that very first verse. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted. Bind up the brokenhearted. When we think about people who are brokenhearted, we all know them. Everybody knows about heartbreak, brokenheartedness, heartbreakers. It's a subject we all know about. We all know individuals who've been impacted and are impacted. And it is such a common issue in the human condition that in popular culture, songwriters have forever, it seems, written songs about this issue of broken-hearted people. So this morning, just to begin, I want to take you back. Take you back, do a little bit of reminiscing to your wild and younger, reckless days, and just consider some of the ways in which it has been spoken of before. So think about this. For example, Dionne Warwick asked this question. Why do you have to be a heartbreaker? You all remember that, I'm sure. Do you remember this guy, Jimmy Ruffin, who asked, what becomes of the brokenhearted? And even the Bee Gees wrote a song that asked another question, although in this case it was Engelbert Humperdinck who was actually singing it. How can you mend a broken heart? And we couldn't leave without touching on Elvis, who was so familiar with the issue, he wrote this. Well, since my baby left me, will I find a new place to dwell? Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be. Oh, you're all reminiscing, aren't you? You're going back. You remember your wild, reckless youth. The days when you'd come to chapel late on a Sunday morning because you'd been up all night Saturday boogieing to Elvis. Honestly, as I put this up in front of you, I wonder what on earth would my dad think that I brought an Elvis song into a sermon on a Sunday morning. Well, Brian, who was our former worship leader, he'd have appreciated it. And he was a good guy as well. So I'm sure it's not that bad. But I bring this because this is a human condition. This is an issue that so many people have faced. And of course, as we think about that, them sharing in these kinds of issues, we consider that often it's spoken of in quite a trivial way, as with many of these songs. It's often spoke about with quite trite responses, and it's often to do with just the romantic heartbreak of a love that's let down. But did you notice in those songs that we sang, let me just put them back up on the screen, did you notice how many of them asked questions? wish they didn't bring an answer. It's the age-old problem of humanity that it really doesn't have much of a solution for. God and Scripture takes the subject a lot more seriously, especially when you start to dig a little bit closer. Just think about it. The imagery that's being used is of a broken heart. So think what that is physically. For anyone who has a damaged heart, this is not a trivial matter. Ask any of those who've had a heart pacemaker fitted. Your surgeons, your doctors would not treat this so lightly. And the Bible doesn't pull its punches when it comes to the seriousness of what a broken heart really is and the need for an adequate response to meet it. And perhaps the reason for that is that the Bible places the heart at the very center of our personality. So take, for example, this familiar verse from Proverbs chapter 4. Above all else, let me repeat that. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Everything you do comes from that personality that is often shaped by brokenness. Think about what happens when, with us, with our bodies, every one of our individual limbs, our tissues, each individual cell is fed, is nurtured from the blood pumped from a heart that is seeking to keep them all going. It's at the center of it. And in much the same way, these verses indicate that the words of our mouths, the attitudes of our lives, our hurts, often expressed by our mouths, flow out of a potentially damaged personality. Our broken-hearted experiences are often seen by other people in the things that go on around us. So I'll give you a reasonably trivial example, but it's one I can give from personal experience. Back in the day, in my youth, I was in a relationship with someone at university at Nottingham. When I left university to go and study for a PhD at Liverpool, that relationship continued. It was significant. We were even talking about engagement at the time. On the very first Valentine's Day of my PhD at Liverpool, I received a Dear John letter, a letter announcing that she was breaking up with me because there was someone else on the scene. And I was utterly devastated. And you could ask my family what my views on the faithfulness of women were for several years, probably, after those events, because it had impacted me so much. From a broken heart flowed a seriously damaged perspective. As I said, that's a reasonably trivial example, because it's to do with that romantic thing. But of course, people struggle with brokenness because of betrayal of more significant relationships, because of family letdowns, because of bereavement, because of all sorts of things where human beings impact them in negative ways. Which is why, unlike Jimmy Rifkin, who asks what becomes of the brokenhearted, and the Bee Gees, who ask who can mend a broken heart, Isaiah actually reveals that God's solution is not just to say, oh, there's a problem here, and refer to brokenness. He gives a heart's response to the age-old problem of human heart brokenness. And it comes in these words, these crisis words that are being met through this one anointed and mentioned in Isaiah. He's speaking of one who is coming. He's speaking of God's anointed one, the Messiah, Jesus. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor of spirit, those who are broken. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, those held captive to all those emotions and feelings and the torment of brokenness, and release from darkness for the prisoners, those who are held back as a consequence. And as we saw last week, what is significant about the true God, what is unique about him, is that he is the God who acts on behalf of his people. And in acting, he sent his son, the Messiah, to do something about it. And you'll remember that in Luke chapter 4, Jesus entered the temple at in Nazareth, at a synagogue, and he walked in and he took the scroll from the attendant and he opened it and he read these words, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me." And at the end, he rolled the scroll up and he handed it back and he announced, "These words are now fulfilled in your presence." It's why we call it the Nazareth Manifesto. And Jesus presented this at the very beginning of his ministry. It was the first thing that he did. And of course, like any politician who, as they're just starting their campaign for re-election, will present a manifesto. "These are the things on which I am campaigning. This is what I'm going to bring to you. I'm going to bring to you clean, cheap water and get rid of fossil fuels," and all the pledges that they make. In the case of Jesus, he came and he made a promise, and then he delivered on that promise. And that's the messenger, the anointed and Messiah who is spoken of through the whole of Isaiah. He is introduced in Isaiah chapter 6. You remember that vision where he sees him in the temple and he sees the king introduced. Next chapter, chapter 7, he calls him Emmanuel, because this God is going to step down. This Messiah will come and walk and be with his people. In chapter 9 of Isaiah, he calls him the Prince of Peace, because he will come to bring peace with God. That brokenness between the hearts of men and the God who is holy and eternal, that brokenness Jesus would fix, he would mend, so that people's hearts could be restored to God. He'd come to bring peace to a world of people in torment because of this brokenness. And then Isaiah chapter 11, he speaks of a spirit-filled bearer of fruit. And the fruit that Jesus' whole ministry and life would bring is the fruit that brings life to us as that brokenness is healed. And then we have Isaiah 53, the suffering servant who became the sacrificial lamb. He wouldn't just come with us, be with us, point the way, live it with us. He would then pay the price to fix it for us. He'd pay for our brokenness. That's the king who is spoken of in Isaiah, a king who'd become the lamb to be sacrificed. Compare this with any other human leader you have ever heard of, past or present, a king, a monarch, a prime minister, a president. or even a dictator. The King of Isaiah 61 comes in absolute spirit-filled, wisdom-filled justice. Other people are on his target. He doesn't use authority to control, to dominate. He brings release. He heals. So he's not subjugating, he's blessing his people. How many rulers do we hear of on our news programs constantly who demand loyalty, whose primary interest is self and self-preservation, maintaining the kingdom, so to speak? The king here is concerned about the brokenness of the hearts of the people and steps down to do something about it. This isn't superficial. This is not trite words. This is not just speaking of, oh yes, I'll do something about health and wealth and your freedom. But he's actually dealing with healing the most fundamental part of a person's personality and spirit, the heart. And unlike all the people who, as those songs that we just heard confirm, don't have the answers to this age-old problem, the king not only shows genuine concern, not only comes down to be with us, but then provides the answer to brokenness. And Jesus steps down and he walks with people, Emmanuel, and he experiences it with them. I don't know whether you saw a news clip of the Prime Minister this week, who was asked a question about people who were amongst the most hurting in our society, at least financially, and the anxiety that comes from that. Did you hear what his response was? Don't want to be political, don't want to point a finger at anybody, but it's interesting, the comparison, and it really struck me. Interest rates are at a 15-year high. They are expected to go much higher and stay for much longer. And there are a whole group of people who are really struggling. And when Rishi Sunak was asked about how people might cope with such high interest rates on his watch, this is what he said. He said, "I understand people will feel anxiety. And I want them to know this, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this." For whom is it going to be okay? And who's going to get through it if they're the people who are at breaking point and about to lose their homes? Who are those people? I wonder how encouraging those comments are to people who know that as things stay as they are going to lose their homes because interest rates, when they made their mortgage agreements, were so much lower. There was no expectation of all this taking place. The King of Isaiah doesn't say, "Oh, just hang in there, it will be okay." He gets alongside, he steps down, and then he endures the pain himself. He says, "I'll walk with you, I'll feel it with you, and then I'll pay the price for you." Psalm 69 is a messianic psalm. That basically means that in addition to speaking into the issues of the writer at this point when he's writing, it also looks forward to when the Messiah would come. And in this one specifically, to moments where Jesus himself would experience on a cross this very brokenness. Let me read it to you. "You know how I am scorned. disgraced and shamed. All my enemies are before you. Scorn has broken my heart and has left me helpless. I looked for sympathy, but there was none. For comforters, but I found none. They put gall in my mouth and gave me vinegar for my thirst. On the cross, it wasn't just Jesus' body that was broken. His heart would have literally given way under the strain of crucifixion. And in Psalm 69, I encourage you to read the rest of it. A picture is painted of the magnitude of Jesus' pain at the scorn, at such rejection. This is emotional, spiritual heartbreak. And it was for us. He wasn't merely saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry." He wasn't passing on condolences and saying, "That's very sad." He did something about it. And he took that brokenness onto himself. He experienced it. He endured it. He paid for it. So that we could have that broken heart separated from God restored once again. More than that, that we would know this Jesus living with us, because then he rose from the grave. He was restored to glory and intercedes for us, the comforter constantly with us, restoring us in that brokenness and then giving us hope, that same hope of an eternal future with God in heaven. That's the healing we receive. So again, as we saw last week, we see a God who acts, and in this case, brings healing. Psalm 34 says this: "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted, and he saves those who are crushed in spirit." He is close to the brokenhearted. To whatever it is that we are going through, he's right there with us and says, "I know your pain and I'm with you in it." And he gives us a perspective to seek to get beyond it. And he saves those who are crushed in spirit, for whom there's nothing left. God steps down and saves. And he does that in our lives right now. So why again do we spend so much time in our service focusing on who our God is, this God who fulfills his word? Today, healing the brokenhearted in our society. Because we're answering those two questions that I brought to you last week, the two fundamental questions that are the only two questions in the whole of theology that really matter. What kind of God, so what? What kind of God do we have? So what is my response? Well, this is the kind of God that we have, who would give himself fully, comprehensively for you. And so what? Well, as followers of Christ, as imitators of Christ, as people filled with the Spirit of God, our comforter, and as people for whom God has written the laws on our hearts, is it not our response to be Christ-like and to do likewise in the world and bring healing around us? Do you remember this on the wall of the church building in the back of the hall? It's that image of the vine and the branches. Jesus said, "I'm the vine and you are the branches." And do you remember all of those leaves on the vine? And most of you have written your names on one of those leaves. You're part of the vine. Do you remember the verse from Revelation 22, which came alongside it, which is now on the wall at the side? I'm going to put it on the wall there for you. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. That's you and me. The leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Who can we bring healing to as we bring the living God to them, as we share ourselves before them? Who are the broken around you? I wonder whether you'd be prepared to ask God for something, to pray courageously, boldly this week. Perhaps in our prayers, you could pray that the Lord would reveal to you someone who is utterly broken, who needs someone alongside them. Or if you know of a number of people, to have someone in particular laid on your heart, who might that person be? Someone for whom God's heart is broken. That's the first thing I want to encourage you to do. Ask God to lay someone on your heart. Secondly, to then ask God to deepen your Christ-like response of compassion, and from that compassion to step out to be with them, to walk with them. Maybe you could contact them. Certainly you could bring them before God in prayer. So be aware of them first. Second, to step out alongside them. Bear them up in prayer as an individual. And then thirdly, maybe to act, to ask God, is there a practical way to lighten that brokenness, that burden that they are feeling? And in the process, to heal in part through you sharing the hope of who Jesus is, for giving them such a sense in all of their brokenness that they are still loved by you and by God, that healing process begins. I want to encourage you this week. Let us be Christ-like in our response to the many around us who are broken. This morning, did you connect with God? Did you reconnect with him? If you've seen the King of Glory, and you've recognized him and you've seen who he is, then I wonder if you can pray those prayers that invite him to break our hearts for what breaks his. I know we sang it last week, but you can imagine what our final hymn is going to be. I see the King of Glory. And maybe use this as a prayer as we sing it together.